Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two gentlemen? Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast, much like Dave Lowry, uncomfortable behind a microphone. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined by my good friend, who rents in West London because Chelsea owns him, Bon Mitchell. Oh. How's it going, buddy?
Oh.
You weren't expecting that one, were you?
I was not. I have a line all set up. I was going to say, you usually say, Mike, how are you doing, Vaughn? And I was going to lead in with, despite all my rage, I'm still just a rat in a cage, or basement more specifically. Because of this Omicron variant, I've finally become the basement-dwelling, computer-addicted, conspiracy theorist podcaster my mother always dreamed I'd become. Who needs sunlight anyways? Overrated. Omicron forever. That's what I had ready, but
I
now you're right after me and my love of Tottenham. And oh boy.
Things did not go well
yesterday. Oh, you did? Well done, my friend.
No,
well,
I purposely looked it up because I follow your sort of trials and tribulations with soccer, of which I understand very little and have very little time for. There's a Simpsons reference for everything, but there was a really good one where they did a soccer intro, and it was one announcer basically describing the play as mundane and as I think soccer is, and then it was a South American announcer describing the same play but with much more emphasis. And there's just an aspect of soccer that I don't get, and I don't get that you get it. But I kid and I jest. I do know that you, I think a close second behind the Jets, you follow Tottenham pretty closely. And I just Googled it. I'm like, maybe they lost and I could poke fun of Vaughn and Christmas number two for Mike.
Well, I'll tell you, the game was yesterday afternoon during working hours, and I didn't have the opportunity to slip away and watch the game. I actually had to do my job, which I don't like doing. I like to have the flexibility just to, you know, watch soccer in the middle of the day if the situation arises. But I saw via, you know, Twitter that they had lost and lost pretty bad. And I'm in the middle of an adult tantrum. I'm not watching the game yet. So,
And Tottenham throwing some racial slurs during the game. It was an all out.
No. Soccer, it was bar not murder. Racial. It was homophobic. Let's just get it right.
Oh, my bad. I apologize. That's much better.
There's a little chant about Chelsea Rent Boys, and I don't advocate it, but it was not racial. We don't go there.
You're just a different kind of terrible. That's okay.
Exactly. Not only am I recovering from the terrible Tottenham loss. It was in the Carabao Cup, Mike, which I know you don't understand what it is, and that's okay. But it does. It's just a dumb tournament that they're in. I'm also recovering from the college football bowl season, and another fantastic Christmas holidays watching college football morning, noon, and night. And to be honest, it kind of simplified things, and it was almost nice. You know, it was nice to fill in because we didn't have the Jets there for a bit. They had a bunch of games canceled, which we'll get into. And, you know, with only one bowl game left, the time is right to turn my attention back to the trials and tribulations of the Winnipeg Jets, which we'll get into. But it's been an interesting, I think, about 10 days since we last podcasted, Mike.
Yeah. And I think it's probably longer. There's only been the...
two games?
The three games, and then there's another one we're taping right before tonight's Thursday. We're taping right before Thursday's game, but there's been basically a 2-week period with only three games and long swaths of time in between, and that was predated by our coach resigning, and so everything's in limbo. So I get no better time, I guess, than check-in time. I don't know where you want to start. I'll start, I think, by saying to everyone, our many, many listeners, I told you so. I said Paul Maurice was the nadir of the Jets organization, and that we would be much better served by a new coach. And what happens? We're 3-0. Proof positive. They don't need to play any more games. That sample size is plenty big. I win.
Yeah. After last podcast saying you wouldn't do this, it's what you open this podcast with. It's like, you know, all my friends and family, I love them so much, they misunderstand my intentions, and then you're just like, double middle fingers to every. That's right. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, you're right. We have the three games. That would include the St. Louis game. I don't think we've talked about. There was I think a total of 5 games canceled: Nashville, Dallas, Minnesota, Chicago, and a game against Calgary. Listen, you know things are bad when they cancel a game in Texas for public health reasons, right? That.
Don't they give out guns for dinner?
I think they do. So, I mean, I think you're on the right track. I mean, the Jets have won 3 in a row. They haven't, it's not that they haven't lost since the change with Paul Maurice, because they lost to Washington. And we talked about that on our last podcast. So it's not like they're unbeaten. Their play has, I mean, to be honest though, their play has been all over the place in those 3 games. I'll get into it a little bit more deeply in a minute, but I thought their game against St. Louis was quite good. I thought their game against Vega was not very good. No. And I thought their game against Arizona was somewhere in the middle. Like, it looked good, but they're playing a very, very inferior opponent, which arguably they should have done even better on. So those are my general impressions of those games. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I guess I can sum it down to one word: scared. I'm a little scared here. And again, all my joking aside to start off this segment, we look the same. We've made some roster changes. I can see that we've made some special team tweaks and adjustments. We've moved DeMello around to now play with Morrissey. Like, there are changes being made, but to me, the product on the ice looks the same. And in reality, a 3-game sample size is very, very small in the grand scheme of things. So you can't draw or extrapolate huge conclusions from it. But the reason I'm scared is because, and I think I alluded to this on an earlier podcast, is that, you know, I put quite a few chips in the basket that Paul Maurice was holding this team, and the reason they're underperforming could be largely attributed to some of his actions or inactions. And I said one of my biggest fears was that if that's not the case, if we look like the same team and we don't look extra motivated to play after our coach resigns, then we might have a personnel problem. And it might be time for some wholesale changes. Again, I'm not advocating that at this stage by any way, shape, or form. But it hasn't, like, you know, you're exactly right. Like, the Vegas game, we came out in the first period extremely slow. I get there was a large layoff in between. But the Arizona game is, to me, the primary example. I think we played Arizona pretty much the same way we played them the first time. We just scored this time. That was really the only difference is... We peppered them with shots, none of them great. I mean, the high-danger chances were 12-11, and I the result was just different. And to me, the process part of me always thinks, I want a process change rather than a result change. Like, winning 3 in a row, that's excellent. But I, you know, in our underlying sort of expected goals, Corsi, Fenwick, have all been over the 50% range, which is an improvement from last year, and even a slight improvement from where we were in the doldrums there in the first quarter, but nothing wholesale that I've seen that doesn't make me scared. Again, the third caveat, small sample size, but I had thought, I don't know why, I had thought there would be at least the first few games, there would be a real pep in the step and fire in the bellies. And I don't think I've seen that, and maybe I'm just looking too hard.
You know what? I do see it differently, and you might be looking for too much too soon. Now, we talked on our last podcast about, you know, culture and how it gets ingrained in the habits of everyone in the workplace, and those things don't disappear immediately. I felt that the coaching change bump was really felt in the St. Louis game. They were probably a little shell-shocked, because that Washington game was the day of the announcement. And so let's potentially chalk it up to that. I felt the Jets played quite well against St. Louis. So maybe that's where they had that energy bump factor in. Now, then they had the layoff. And then they had the Golden Knights. And I agree with you. That first period was a giant bucket of yuck. And overall, the game was about as sloppy as a whorehouse on a Monday morning. So, you know, we were very fortunate to pull that one out. I thought that, you know, we started to see manifest some of these small but significant changes For example, there was talk of getting more people to the net, and we saw that very nice deflection by Paulie Walnuts. We talked, there has been some subtle changes on the power play, right? And that Andrew Kopp goal was beautiful, power play goal in the third period.
Fair.
Yeah. And then, you know, and if you look at, from what I've seen, I think there's been some changes on the power play. There's certainly been changes on the penalty kill, and I think those started prior to Maurice leaving. I don't have the stats in front of me. I have it in my other... In a spreadsheet that unfortunately I don't have open right now, but the Jets have given up one goal on the penalty kill in the last seven games.
Yeah.
So that's starting to
turn around. There's been
more
aggression on that side and that front as well.
There's been more aggression on the PK, which I like. I've also seen more engagement from the defensemen when they're 5-on-5. So those are three subtle, but I do think significant things that are going to pay off for the Jets going forward. Now, I did see some stats today online that say, you know, the Jets are basically going full throttle, 5-on-5, and they're just, you know, their shooting percentage has gone up on the power play. That's about as different as things are. And I'm a little bit more open. I don't think hockey players, coaches, culture accepts radical change very well. They want to evolve over time.
The league's mired in that, right? It's
very
slow to change, and then when it is changed, it's, hey, that team does something that works. Let's all do that simultaneously.
Well, that's professional sports. I mean, for me, the NFL has become unwatchable because everyone just does the same thing. And, you know, every game looks like the last game. But I don't watch enough variation in hockey to really make a informed comment on that. But like, I watch Jets. That's what I watch. And, you know, this three-game sample has been all over the place. The quality of our opponents have been all over the place. You factor in there these stops and starts due to COVID. And I don't think that is a great foundation to really, you know, build so any type of momentum in one direction or another. So we are 3-0 in our last three games. I give them full credit for that. I give them full credit for playing really well in the St. Louis game. I give them full credit for battling back and you know, eking out the win in Vegas, even though they gave up that late goal. Quick story. I mean, I was able to watch the game because I was at a family dinner and I knew the score before I watched the game. If I had been watching that game in live, I would have broken something in my house.
It would have been an empty net tantrum?
Oh, it would have been horrible. Everything would have been broken in my basement. Everything. I would have been... But I knew what the final outcome was before I turned the TV on, so I was able to handle it emotionally. Otherwise,
sometimes that's better.
And then who's this Vemelka guy? Who's this? Let's wrap it up. I over two games he's only let in two goals, and he on two goals on 94 shots. That's a 9.79 save percentage, and the power play was 0-for-10 against Arizona in the two games we played against him this year. Who is this guy? And you know, obviously very impressive.
I was watching it on an American feed, and it was the Arizona feed. And they would not stop waxing philosophical about him. And basically, 70% of the analysis during the game was how much he owned space in our heads. And I couldn't disagree. I also did learn through our American broadcasters that Winnipeg has a 10 p.m. curfew and that we should pull ourselves out of the dark ages. And then no one fact-checked or came back to correct that. I love Americanism. We'll just say stuff. It doesn't have to be true. And we'll just move on.
If we say it enough times and loud enough, it becomes true.
It becomes true.
And one hell of a model American.
So why are you watching an American?
Oh, because I don't have the cable set up in my place. But I'm going to do that every time now because you know what it avoids? Kevin Sawyer.
Oh,
watching it on my iPad from an American.
He's in COVID protocol.
What's that?
He's in COVID protocol. He was not the
commentator
last week.
Oh,
no.
Come on.
Just your luck. That is Michael Guthrie luck right there.
Oh, That was the only saving grace. It's like, I don't have to listen to Kevin Sawyer. So I agree with you that so I think the takeaway, and it's well put, Vaughn, is the Jets need to be more consistent, like your voice on this podcast, and less inconsistent, like my voice on this podcast.
Absolutely. And you know, because here's the thing. The Jets currently sit fifth in the division with 37 points. Minnesota and Colorado are directly above them with 40 points, but they also have games in hand. Okay, so we got to start being consistent and consistently good if we want to start moving up, you know, the charts here. We're on the cusp of a you know, I think our division is very competitive, and at the moment we are on the cusp of a playoff position, and we're going to have to string together wins. I mean, the teams above us are playing very, very well. So it's all, you know, fun and games. We can laugh and joke, but, you know, I hate it when the players say, well, there's a lot of hockey left to be played. Well, that will run out pretty quick. The math starts changing really quickly. You can only, you know, expect to go 8-1-1 for, you know, four straight 10-game stretches.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You can't just bank on that. Eventually the math becomes that. So the Jets they need to make a move now. I think that probably factored into the timing of the Maurice move, if we can call it that, because it was a resignation and not a firing, or somewhere in between the two. But they need to make a move. The time to change the voice, the time to change or tweak the structure was absolutely when it happened, if we want to have any chance of, you know, making it into the playoffs and then doing something in the playoffs.
I don't want to take too pessimistic a view, because obviously we're on a bit of a winning streak. Tonight's game is going to be interesting, and very low-hanging fruit analysis here. This is going to be a litmus test, because Colorado's on fire, and we are... We typically struggle with teams with high-end talent. Mm-hmm. Connor McDavid, I'm looking at you. We tend to get pumped, and they tend to have their way. And so I'll be interested to see what, if any, changes we make. Dave Lowry and others on the Winnipeg side, what we do to sort of combat that, and how we fare tonight. Because you're absolutely right. All it takes is a 2-3 game losing streak here, and our mathematical odds of being playoff bound are almost non-existent.
Well, the good thing about the Jets, Mike, further to your point, the good things about the Jets is, although we struggle with the elite teams, we tend to play down to the level of the bad teams. So it evens out. It's just frustration every time we turn on the television, much like watching Tottenham Hotspur. But that's another story for another time.
It's the Kevin Nealon, it's the circle of life. So there are two... I had two sort of interesting tidbits, and these are our sides, but I did find an interesting stat. I don't know what we're going to get into pre-boarding announcements, and we'll pick who we're nominating for the penalty box and first class, but I don't want to step on your toes. I did not know this. Since 2017, Kyle Connor has 148 goals, and in that time, trails only, I think, it's Ovechkin, Matthews, Dreisaitl, McDavid, and Pastrnak in goal scoring. And he, to me, is obviously the least well-known of all those players, and virtually non-existent in the national media. And, you know, that the overtime winner sort of punctuated it in that he's officially underrated, and someone that you and I think, both have maybe properly rated but weren't too high on. But I don't want to be too much of a sounding board for him, but just incredible stats for a guy that I think kind of goes unnoticed at times.
Yeah, we've touched upon that this year. We're both now firmly in the camp of pro Kyle Connor. We really see him as being able to drive a line. I think he and Dubois make a great tandem. Harkins is one that you think looks good on paper, you know, a hardworking guy, goes in the corner. There's just not a lot of chemistry there. You know, putting on my conspiracy hat, my tinfoil hat, you know, I don't know what the role was of Kyle Connor on the Connor Scheifele Wheeler line, whether that helped elevate him or kept him down. Maybe for the last year and a half, it has kind of held him back, where, you know, he's really been the third wheel on that line. And despite, you know, doing a great job at scoring goals. He was certainly in the manner in which that line acted on the ice. He was the third wheel. He was servicing the other two guys who sort of drove the play while that those three were on the ice. And now you see out he's got a more prominent role amongst the three, and he's doing such a great job of it. I hope more people. I hope this continues for the entire season. I hope it becomes part of his permanent regime and more people notice him.
Sure. So do we want to go to pre-boarding announcements?
Absolutely.
So we'll start with first class.
All right. Our first class assignment, we have a new sponsor. We have sponsors for first class in the penalty box. So the first class assignment is brought to you by First Mining Gold, providing first class gold mining development advice and services since 2015. Okay, so our sponsor came through big time over Christmas.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, it just bought us some equipment, and it's awesome. And big shout out to our good friend Dan Wilton. You give him a shout out too, Mike.
Right. So this is it's a perfect tie-in because Dan is literally one of the nicest guys ever, and he very generously gave us some podcasting equipment. The subtle undertones, and Bon hasn't said this, and Dan hasn't said this, but like, hey, Mike, your voice is a little inconsistent from podcast to podcast, and this is a direct tie-in. Years ago, when I was in Vancouver, I stayed at Dan's place for about a week and a half, and he was in and out, he travels all the time, and I'm always worried, perpetually, that I'm overstaying my welcome, even within my family. Geez. And so I went, I had a bunch of stuff to do. I came back and I was living out of a suitcase and all my stuff in my suitcase had been packed up and basically neatly put away. And the suitcase had been filed under the bed. And I took that to mean that Dan had come in, packed up my stuff, put it under my bed as a very subtle hint to say, dude, get out of my house. So I just picked up the bag and left, texted him and said, yeah, sorry, man, I'm out. And it wasn't discovered until months and months later. He asked me, he's like, why did you leave so abruptly? And I was like, well, I kind of thought you wanted me out. And I said, you packed my bag. And he's like, no, that was my cleaning lady. So, the moral of the story is Dan is very generous and I'm not very smart.
Oh, come on. So, yes, thanks to Dan. He is going to be our permanent sponsor on for the first class assignment. His company, he's president and CEO of First Mining Gold. So that's a wonderful tie-in for the first class assignment. I'll jump in as I have the floor, Mike. I am going to recognize someone that we don't recognize very often. We take him for granted. I'm going to move up into first class Connor Hellebuyck. We spend a lot of time talking about forwards and forward lines, and rightly so. We talk a lot about defensive pairings, who should be protected, who should not be protected as all that stuff. We spend a lot, but we don't talk about Connor Hellebuyck. No, he is the rock. He is the best player on the team. I think he's played well this year. I think he's always giving us a chance. Now, something I found out, now you'll remember last year I was tracking what happens when the Jets score four or more goals and when they don't.
Right. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So this year, when the Jets score three goals or less, their record is 3-12-3. When the Jets score four or more goals, their record is 12-0-1. So to me, that says two things. Number one, your goalie's always giving you a chance to win. And number two, let's go. Let's play offense. Let's jump up into the play. And that was part of the frustrating things about last year is that we saw a similar record of when we score goals and when we don't, but we were actively trying not to score goals, it seemed, with the way what we were asking our defensemen to do, like not jump up in the play. Yeah. Which is very little. So with all that is to say, I wanted to take the time to recognize Connor Hellebuyck, although I don't love his position on vaccines and testing, all those types of things, but I would have him as my first string goalie, just not as my Minister of Health. How about you, Mike?
Noted. I'm sure he's wildly disappointed. So I had originally, tongue-in-cheek, thought I was going to do Dave Lowry, but I've already beat that dead horse. But I'm going to go in a similar vein. I'm going to go to someone who is unheralded on this podcast and just in the Jets media in general. I'm going Dylan DeMello.
Okay.
His move up with Morrissey, again, small sample size, has statistically at least shown some vast improvements on the defensive end. And I think they've been our most consistent defensive pairing over the past three games. But it was just another fresh reminder. Like, he was incredible in the Edmonton series. And then, you know, one of the prime contributors to us handing out a sweep to McGolfing. And I just, he is consistently consistent in that he's not flashy. He doesn't make the big plays or score goals, but his defensive mindedness and presence as a stalwart back there needs to be recognized, and no better time than the present.
Yeah, I think it's a good call. I was quite pleased to see him promoted up to first pairing, and the play has been quite good since that's happened.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, his promotion into first class is going to have to wait until he gets out of COVID protocol, which he was placed into today. Someone has been checking Twitter. Were you working again, Mike?
Shame on me. I had no idea. I literally haven't had the opportunity to check. Well, that's... see, this is what happens when you get kudos from Mike Guthrie. You get COVID.
Yeah.
Well, that sucks, and that's not going to help us tonight.
You catch a communicable disease. Thanks, Mike.
Not the first one I've spread.
And that brings us to the penalty box. Now, I'm in the final stages of negotiating a sponsor for the penalty box. So until that's finalized, which we expect perhaps sometime over the weekend, we're going to say the penalty box segment is brought to you by husbands who buy their wives appliances for anniversary gifts. Think about what you've done, fellas. You're going to end up in the penalty box. Mike, who are you putting in the penalty box?
I'm also going, nice by the way, I'm going on the decor as well. This is a 2021-2022 award for me. Brendan Dillon hasn't been as advertised, at least in my humble opinion. I was very excited with the acquisitions of him and Schmidt, but it's been, I don't know, maybe a little underwhelming. He does provide some grit back there. I do like his positional hockey, but he's just not a great skater. He doesn't move the puck all that well. I don't think his sort of foray into the fisticuffs and the grittiness is somewhat fleeting sometimes. Sometimes he seems very engaged, sometimes not. Again, I think this is maybe a bit of a product of higher expectations. I think he's been serviceable, but again, there was an article that I was going through, and just statistically, he's been a bit of a disappointment. And at the start of when the trade first happened, I think a lot of pundits had basically set out there that we got a bit of a steal for the trade. And mm-hmm. Now the tides have turned a bit. Again, still very early. But it's something I thought I had to mention. So he's going in the penalty box this week.
Okay, you know, I see where you're going with that. I was kind of surprised to see Nate Schmidt move down to the third pair and not Brendan Dillon, because I think overall, Nate Schmidt's play, while imperfect, has been better. Now, maybe you're just getting too much of the same thing by putting Schmidt and Pionk together. I don't know, but in terms of where you're, you know, how much ice time you get, depending on what pairing you're with, I thought it made more sense to move, Dillon down based on his somewhat lack of production or noticeable contribution. Now, in terms of penalty box, and I've done it with this guy before, but I continue to be, you know, somewhat disappointed in Andrew Kopp. He's a guy that has moved around the lineup, and I give him full credit for that.
Yeah.
Obviously, his attitude must be pretty decent to accept these varying assignments. But I do feel that when he's played in the top six, that, you know, he's missing making plays that I think he should be making. Mm-hmm. He's just losing the puck, or just missing a pass, or just not making that case that he's a top six player, or that he can be a trusted top six player. He is a very serviceable player. He's a very useful player. He's a Swiss Army knife of a player. But for me, he misses too many plays that could, you know, be good plays for us to really, you know, for me justify it. Because I think he's pushing for top six role. I'm not sure I see it. No. So just again, we've talked about, this is not a major penalty. This is just a 2-minute minor for Andrew Kopp for not making enough plays where he should be making these plays. It's kind of like a receiver in football. He's dropping too many balls, right? We're throwing at him time and time again. You know, I don't want to hear about the plays you make. I'm more focused on the ones you drop. And that's from a coaching perspective there. So for me, I'm putting Andrew Kopp in the penalty box.
Fun fact, a little tidbit for you. I was doing a bit of research for our trivia segment, and I ran across some numbers that I found interesting. My best friend and yours, Nick Antipoff, in the 4 years that he was with the Atlanta Thrashers and the Winnipeg Jets, he put up totals, and again, these are rough. I'm keeping the numbers rough to make a better point, but about 60 goals and 100 assists. And Andrew Kopp, over 8 years with the Jets, about the same number. Now, it's apples and oranges and not a direct comparison, but it just sort of struck me. I was looking at overall scoring totals for Jets 2.0, and those two are right side by side. And it just struck me to a certain extent that he is, to my mind, and I think you said it well, I think he always is a bottom six player, a very good one and a high-end one. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad, to a certain extent, that we didn't extend his contract any more than 1 year. I like Andrew Kopp. I think he's, like you say, he's very versatile and seems to be a good locker room guy. But I think some of his scoring spurts that come maybe once or twice a year, I think are a direct product of the line mates that he's playing with. That I do think that he's got speed and he can keep up with a play, but that a lot of that is power play and just happenstance and fortuitous line selections, right? And I've noticed that as well. You put him on the third line and it becomes a bit of an invisibility problem.
Agreed. Let's move on to the flight plan.
Okay.
All right, Mike, I have a bit of a theory that occurred to me during, especially when they're not of the, tinfoil hat variety. So here's my theory that kind of occurred to me as I tried to continue to process why Paul Maurice walked away from the game. And here it goes. The Jets are in the middle of a rebuild. Perhaps retooling is a better way to describe it, but I really think the Jets are at a point right now where we're going to have to make some difficult decisions about moving out longstanding players, elevate players that have had a secondary role, and then integrate young players into the lineup. So those are a lot of moving parts. I think we saw for a number of years that we were just trying to recreate the 2017-18 season again and again. Yeah. And time has moved on. And we're going to have to start decommissioning some of the longstanding elite performers on the team, and that's going to be painful. We're going to have to elevate some of those guys that perhaps were kept down by the head coach over a period of time to be the key drivers on the team. And I'm thinking about Nikolaj Ehlers, Kyle Connor, Pierre-Luc Dubois. Now, everyone thinks they're good players, but they're going to slowly move into the roles that was formerly occupied by the Blake Wheelers, the Mark Scheifele's, the Matthew Perreault's, the Paul Stastny's. I know Bufflin was on defense, but, you know, those guys are being decommissioned. The middle guys have to be elevated. And that means we're going to have to change systems, change roles, responsibilities, ice time assignments, all of those types of things. And perhaps the most daunting element is to start bringing in guys and, like, okay, the Harkins and the Vesalainens of the world, Gustafsson, fine. But the Perfettis and the Vilihanalas, integrating them and coaching them to play at an NHL level. And that, operating on those three different levels, is what the daunting task for Maurice might have been. So it's hard to look at the Jets and say, hey, we're rebuilding, but we're definitely in the middle of a major, major transitional retooling phase that was going to take a lot of time, energy, and effort on the part of the coaches to get right, and the guy wasn't up to the task. So I don't know. That's just kind of occurred to me. What do you think, Mike?
Well, Cole Perfetti's playing tonight, so that's a good start. Whether or not it's a long-term stay, but I think it's almost inevitable. His play in the time-shortened World Juniors and just his play in the AHL, I think, has dictated a chance, and I think a chance for the remainder of the season, provided he doesn't play just awful. I think it's inevitable now. And we had touched upon this earlier. That, was, to me, is one of Paul Maurice's greater flaws, was that his unwillingness to not only bring up and play younger talent, but to nurture and coach them, has, I think, stunted the growth of the organization to a certain extent over the past few years. And I could not agree with you more in that. I like Blake Wheeler. I like Mark Scheifele, but they shouldn't be getting more minutes than Connor, Ehlers, and Dubois under any circumstances. I think Helena should be brought up. I think Logan Stanley, it was a good experiment. Let's learn to, you know, let's not fall into a sunk cost fallacy, right? We put a lot of chips into his, we went all in on him on the expansion draft, and I think we're still holding on to that mindset. I don't think he should be playing in the NHL at the moment, and I think we've got a perfectly good defenseman in the AHL who could. And I hope, like I said, I hope Perfetti stays up, and I agree, it's not easy. I suffer extraordinarily from... If the Jets aren't playing well, just bring in new bodies. And that's not always the right solution. But in this case, I think the bodies that we do have are the right ones, and we should give them more than one or two game stints. I don't know what's going to happen when Wheeler gets back or when he's coming back, but we've mentioned it 100 times. He should be on the third line. Perfetti should be, like, did you see him in the World Juniors on the power play?
I did.
That guy is light years advanced in his age. And how he's not on our second power play unit is baffling to me. And that's just, you know, that's one of 15 different changes that can be made, and part of that being youth. So, long story short is, I couldn't agree with you more, and it was well said.
Well, we have a coaching staff that has Nick Ehlers on the second power play unit. So,
right.
I mean, we're really going to see in the coming days and weeks, you know, how much... or how deeply Paul Maurice was ingrained in the rest of the coaches that remain behind. Are they simply just like, is this just, was Paul, like, are you know, is it just three guys in a trench coat that actually look like Paul Maurice? You know what I mean? So we'll see. You know, it will be interesting because I think there's an opportunity for these guys to put a little bit of their mark. We'll see how much of this into Kevin Cheveldayoff, because I think it's been pretty clear that he wants some of the things that we've mentioned to happen. So, it's not necessarily a roster which you immediately look at and say, this is a roster in transition, but I really think it is. And I think the quicker we recognize it, the quicker we make some good moves and get guys to where they need to be. You know, as I've mentioned before, it's not only about getting the right people on the bus and the right people and the wrong people off the bus. It's about getting the right people in the right seats. And I think that's where we are with this crew. Yeah, we've got to get the right people in the right seats. And we have the right people on the bus or to a large extent, but they're not sitting in the right seats. And until that happens, I think we're going to be, you know, stuck in 15th of 32 teams, which is kind of where we are right now.
No, couldn't agree more. Do we want to bring back a very popular but has been sidelined bit? Trivia time?
I'd love to. I mean, if the email traffic is any gauge, I really think it doesn't matter. But let's bring it back anyways. Let's go on to trivia.
Okay. And as we've been doing, I'll start us off. To ease us back into it, I was getting a little convoluted with the questions because you're very adept at these, and I was purposely trying to up the difficulty level. But I'm going to, and there's a story behind why I think it's a bit timely anyway. Who was the first player to score a goal in Jets 1.0?
Oh, that's a great question. My question goes back to Jets 1.0 history. I'm going to say Ab McDonald.
Morris Lukwich.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you were at that game with me, right? When he was in the stands, or they featured him for 6 seconds until they turned it to Dancing Gabe. Maybe that was Rich. But again, kudos to him if this is altruistic and just a way to reach out to the community. But my 7-year-old's hockey team got an email, and it basically, the gist of it was, Morris Lukowicz is for sale. Like, he'll come to your practice for $20 a parent, and he'll coach a practice for you. Let us know who wants in. And to me, that's a sign of either one of two things. Luke Witch is a good guy and he just wants to give back to the community, or he is broke and has some sort of addiction that we're not familiar with. I loved him. I know our buddy Rich loved him. I just found it was timely because I had seen him at a game and then all of a sudden he popped up my email feed. So I thought, well, let's base the trivia around him this week.
Well, that is both heartwarming and sad. All in equal amounts there somehow. Yeah, that's impressive. Well, my trivia question also has to do with Jets 1.0. So, I wanted to frame it around Paul Maurice. Now, Paul Maurice was only the second coach in Jets 2.0 history, and asking who the first coach was would be too easy. It's Claude Noel. So let me ask you this. There's the question, and then there's a bonus question.
Oh, no.
So the question is, who was the last coach in Jets 1.0 history? The last coach. The head coach of the Winnipeg Jets in their last NHL game.
I'm blanking on any.
You're so young, you're not old like me. Who can remember these things?
I'm just a spring chicken here.
Yeah, this is what you get for podcasting
right now.
Like,
Guthrie, get your shit together. And
this is what you get for podcasting with a 29-year-old.
I'm not gonna delay the inevitable. You just let me know. I'm gonna be thoroughly embarrassed.
Terry Simpson, he coached 97 games for the Jets, going 43, 47, and 7. Now the bonus question is here's where you could really redeem yourself.
I doubt it.
Who was the very first coach of the Winnipeg Jets? The very first coach.
Oh. Is he a famous guy?
Yes.
And he's a fiery guy, right?
Could say that.
I'm fishing.
You're trying to find the name of John Ferguson.
That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah. That's your answer?
That was the guy I was thinking of.
Yeah, it's not. He was a coach. He was a coach, a head coach at one time, but not the first one. The first coach of the Winnipeg Jets was Robert Marvin Hull, Bobby Hull.
No.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Yeah, it's true.
Right, sorry. Holy man. Do trivia cards get revoked? Is there going to someone knock on my door? I'm going to have to tap.
Well, after this segment, the trivia police may be coming to our doors and, you know, asking us to edit this out.
I'm sure there are folks who are like, why do these guys set up a bit to tell us how dumb they are? Their first 40 minutes already confirmed that. We really need to do trivia?
Exactly. Listen, we're 40 minutes in. No one's listening to this stage anyway. So let's move on to the last call.
Nice. Okay.
All right. So here's where we just kind of take a look at what's coming up. So the Jets are currently scheduled to play Colorado tonight, which is in about 15 minutes from when we're recording. And then not again until Thursday, January 13th in Detroit. We have lots of guys in COVID. Hopefully we'll have some of them back. I shouldn't say lots. There's a couple. Hopefully we might have a couple of those guys back. Blake Wheeler is not expected to be back for that game in Detroit, but we have a bit of a break after tonight. The Jets have postponed a few upcoming home games, and that includes Seattle, which was supposed to be Saturday, Minnesota Monday, and Edmonton on Sunday, January 16th. Interestingly, the game on Saturday, January 15th, has not been postponed. Assumedly, this is because it will be played, but in front of no fans as per public health orders. It's a Saturday night game, so I'm sure that Sportsnet wants something on their television, even if it is in an empty room. So that's what we have coming up. So we play Colorado in a few minutes, and then Detroit on the 13th, and then where is it? Ottawa on the 15th. What do you think we're going to go, Mike? Three games.
2-1, I think.
Ooh.
I don't have a good feeling about tonight's game, and now that I just realized that DeMelo's out, I shouldn't be so pessimistic, but you can never be pleasantly surprised if you're not pessimistic to begin with.
Ah, good point.
So, yeah, I think we'll go 2-1 in this stretch, and I think that's good enough to... I don't think we're going to gain a lot of ground in the playoff race that way. But, opponents like Colorado are a bit of a buzzsaw. And we've had improved play, but not to the point where I think we can stop offensive juggernaut for 60 straight minutes. So that's my take.
Fair enough. I know that there's a few injuries and COVID situations in Colorado, but they're going to still have a strong team.
Yeah.
I don't like the disjointed nature of the upcoming games. I'm going to say 1-1-1. Okay. I think we'll eke out a victory probably. I mean, Ottawa, you know, I like their roster. We saw them really improve last year. I know they're struggling this year. So we'll see. Detroit, I don't know a lot about. Again, they're a team I think is in the bottom third. And Colorado, you know, we're gonna beat Colorado 6-1, you know, losing overtime in Detroit. And then, you know, and then win or lose in overtime in Detroit and then lose 4-1 to Ottawa. That's probably what's gonna happen. So they're a wonderful crew, our Jets. I think you said on the last podcast what you wanna see is some consistent and good play from them, and I think we're still there. We want to see an identity start to formulate over these upcoming games, something different than what we've been used to. You know, continue to build on the things that have made them successful in this three-game stint, which is, you know, success on the power play, an improved penalty kill, and continued good 5-on-5 play. I think that's what we can really wish for in the next three games. All right, we got 11 minutes to game time now, so let's move to the sign-off. So, fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge, the official Face-Off Hockey Network podcast for the Winnipeg Jets. Check us out on Twitter at Airport Lounge 55, on the interweb at thefhn.net, with all episodes also available on Apple, Spotify, and Overcast. Be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge, because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets, go.